Our first reading can be found on page 419 in the Green Bibles. 419 in the Green Bibles. And if you don't have a Green Bible, we are reading from First Chronicles chapter 16. 419 in the Green Bible. 1 Chronicles chapter 16. And we are starting from verse 23 to verse 34. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idle, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendid and majesty are before him. Strength and joy are in his dwelling place. Ascribe to the Lord, all you families of nations. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Bring an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Let the sea resound and all that is in it. Let the fields be jubilant and everything in them. Let the trees of the forest sing. Let them sing for joy before the Lord. For he comes to judge the earth. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, and his love endures forever.
Hello, you've got me again. The second reading is from 2 Timothy chapter 1, page 1195 on the Church Bible. This won't take long. May the Lord show mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, because he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. On the contrary, when he was in Rome, he searched hard for me until he found me. This is the word of the Lord.
And you have me again. I can't wait. Well, thank you again. My name's Darren Tosh. We've met. Thank you for having me today, and it's very nice of you to allow me to share even more. Greet Prisca, Aquila, and the household of Onesiphorus. So three great names that I'm sure that you've probably come across. But before we start looking at those great names in 2 Timothy, let me just acknowledge a few other good names in the room. So I'm here today with one of my colleagues, Sarah. And Sarah has been to the church, I think this is a fifth or sixth time now. So Sarah and I have started working together 5 or 6 years ago, roughly 5 years ago. And And so it's been great to be able to work with Sarah. So Sarah's local to Chelmsford. However, you can tell that I'm not so local. At least I wasn't born here. We live in Chingford, so we're not completely distant from you. It's about 45 minutes when you do it right. This morning didn't work quite that way, but that's my own fault. But three other good names are my children. So I've got Matea, Hudson, and Caleb with me today. And my wife, Jody, is actually, she's overseas. She's doing some ministry. She also works with Samaritan's Purse, so she's not with me today. She's essentially the pastoral care manager for the Cambodia and Vietnam offices, but she's meeting with some staff in the U.S. today. So my goal today is just to give you a short message, leave you with a few things that you can probably spend more time looking at in your private time and to be thinking and praying about. But to start, just so you can understand a little bit more about who I am and who the organizations that I serve, I've got this great video that I do want to, I'm getting ahead of myself, that I do want to be able to show you. And it's a worship song that I haven't actually sung in any churches, but it's just got a great, great message to the video. And it's called Less Like Me. And the video shows a whole bunch of our activity around the world. So let's just take a look at that video.
Just don't get it right. Where I talk a talk that I don't walk and miss the moments right before my eyes. Somebody with a hurt that I could have helped. Somebody with a hand that I could have held. When I just can't see past myself, Lord, help me be. A little more like mercy, a little more like grace, a little more like kindness, goodness, love and faith. A little more like patience, a little more like peace, a little more like Jesus, a little less like me.
Nice little overview of some of our key work that Sarah and I've been busy with over the past. Most of those are from just in the past 2 years. You saw Ukraine. You saw a little bit of Turkey, Syria, Iraq. There's a complete mix of what's happened in there. But to back up, the video is called "A Little Bit More Like Jesus, Less Like Me," and isn't that just the goal for today, our goal for our daily living, that we would end up just being a little bit more like Jesus? So I love that video. I thought it was a great way to be able to have you understand a little bit broader beyond raising families about what Samaritan's Purse and the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, which I'm also the CEO for. I've worked for Samaritan's Purse for 23 years. This has been my adult life, basically. And over those years, I think this is my eighth country to call home. We hardly ever actually get to be in Canada. We were briefly there as we had our kids when they were quite small. We did 5 years in Canada. The UK has now become the longest country that we've lived in since my wife and I met in Cambodia, and we did Cambodia for 7 years. So keep going. This might become the closest thing I've got to home. But my kids, this is the fifth or sixth country that they've lived in. We've bounced around a lot with them, and so they've had quite the life. And so the topic for today is really biblical hospitality. And this is something that's really important because I am forever a stranger, it feels like, especially over the past 23 years. So this is something that I've seen lived out, and I thought, I'll just bring this today. I wasn't sure really what to share, but I thought this was an important part of my personal journey, but this is also, I think, speaks to a lot of the things that you have going on here at the church by all of the activities. As a family, it can sound really exciting to say that the kids have grown up in five or six countries. It is really exciting. We've done lots of amazing things. But it certainly comes with a lot of hardships. And because of who Samaritan's Purse is, we're one of those organizations that chooses to be first in and always trying to go to the areas that others aren't going to, which then puts us into difficult times. So it's been exciting, but it hasn't been easy. As a family, we've experienced, lots of earthquakes. We moved to Nepal right after the big earthquake, and so the kids have lots of experience with earthquake drills and running out of buildings. We've had horrible medical emergencies as a family. We've had armed robbery. We've had death threats in Nepal and Vietnam more recently. So we've been through a lot, but I think probably one of the things that ends up sort of making often hardest, especially as a parent, is there can also be incredible times of loneliness because you're forever the stranger. And if you go through an earthquake, if you go through, if you have the death threats even, you end up getting at least a shot of adrenaline. But loneliness is a horrible thing that we experience, whether we're moving from country to country or if we're just across the street. And so biblical hospitality is something that's been really something that's kept us going. Seeing how people have lived out their lives to be able to embrace us and help settle us in these various countries has been a really important part of our journey. So I wanted to just take a look at this text from 2 Timothy. And I'm not able to fully read it there, so let me turn my back. So this is Paul's writing, and it says, "You know that everyone in the province of Asia has deserted me, including Phygellus and Hermogenes. May the Lord show mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, because he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. On the contrary, when he was in Rome, he searched hard for me until he found me. May the Lord grant that he will find mercy from the Lord on that day. You know very well how many ways he helped me in Ephesus." So the background to this this section of 2 Timothy is that the church had been around for roughly 30 years at this point, and Nero was the emperor of Rome, and he was persecuting the Christians and or anyone who labeled themselves as Christians. And then Rome burnt down in 64 AD, and Christians were to blame for part of that, or they used that as a reason, and so anyone suspected of being a Christian was tossed in jail, and Paul, being one of the leaders, he was especially tossed in jail and kept, they believed that he was actually moved around from place to place. So Paul was busy preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ through the countryside. He was arrested, and it came to the point where even visiting Paul in jail would have identified you guilty by association, and so then you're tossed in jail as well. And so poor Paul, he is awaiting the death penalty, or he's awaiting death, and he's exhorting Timothy in this letter to just be an example for those who are in need. And this is something that was really personal to Paul, because here he is literally in prison, and reminding Timothy of everything that he went through. So in verse 15 it says, this is the sad part, he said, "You know, everyone in the province of Asia deserted me, they abandoned me, including these two guys." And how heart-wrenching is that to be when people who you think are close to you end up turning your backs on you, especially when they're in ministry? And I'm sure this happens in churches everywhere, but Christians disappoint one another, and it hurts. It really hurts. And so you can just hear that in Paul's text when he actually goes to the point of actually naming Phygellus and Hermogenes as being two men who really disappointed him so much. And so I think that we just need to recognize that this is something that Paul experiences, something we experience, and you'll probably experience going forward, that there's going to be hurt that happens even amongst believers, where we're disappointing one another. And I think this is a challenge for us. This is a challenge for you and for I, is that we need to, we really just have to work hard to support one another. Jesus told the disciples to love one another, and for this is how they will know that you're my disciples. This is something we're commanded to do. Often that verse is quoted, and we're supposed to, and it's an encouragement to go out and love outside the church, which we should. But when Jesus is, you know, talking to his disciples, he's like, you need to love one another, because this is how they'll know that you are my disciples. And so this has always been a challenge for me, because we're not all going to get along. We're not always going to enjoy one another's company. But we really need to work hard to be encouraging one another. So we have Paul feeling very abandoned. But we can recognize that God still, even though we're often disappointed, God still has somebody in the midst to be able to help and encourage us in our time of need. So in verse 16, we end up hearing the contrast. We end up hearing how appreciative he was of the household of Onesiphorus when nobody else was around for him. And he says, you know, Lord, grant mercy on that household. Complete contrast to when he was naming and expressing his disappointment in the other two. So Onesiphorus, there's not a lot of text around him, but we can see that he did something very special for Paul, for him to be called out. And so let's look, there's four things that you can see in the text here that I think we can walk away with today and be thinking on. Firstly, it says in verse 16 that he often refreshed me. And I think that this is something we just need in our lives. We need believers in one another who end up encouraging us emotionally and sometimes even physically, offering that refreshment. We've gone through tons of medical stuff as a family, and the amount of love that we got from the church by people just saying, I know you say you don't need meals, but we're going to bring you meals. How great is that? And often when people are in crisis, they don't quite honestly know what they need. And that refreshment is something that sometimes we just have to foist on them, because it's something that will certainly be a benefit. When we ended up going through one horrible medical emergency with our youngest son, Caleb, we adopted Caleb, and he hadn't had his full cleft palate surgery, so we did that in Canada. The palate surgery his palate was so wide that it was a very difficult surgery, so he ended up almost dying post-surgery. And he ended up being left with a tracheostomy because he lost his airway. And at the time, you're just panicking trying to save your kid. And the doctor said to us, you do realize what a tracheostomy will do. And we said, well, he'll breathe through his neck. And they said, well, but he'll also be mute. And it's like, oh, okay, right? I hadn't thought of that. And so we have a mute child now. And they said, and you'll need to have 24-hour watch on him, so you're going to have home care, and someone's going to have to live in your home. And you think, okay, right, all right, we'll get through that. But we live in a small bungalow, and so there wasn't room for a nurse, quite honestly, in our house, so we had to look at ways of living in our basement. And it was our fellow Christians, and some that I wasn't even that close to, don't even know, they said, we'll help figure out how to fix your basement so that you can move into the basement. And so those points of refreshment have been so important for our personal walk. And so we can just see that Onesiphorus was, you know, he refreshed Paul. And so we need those people to be in our lives. And so we need to be challenged to be helping those. The second thing we can see is that it says that to be truly hospitable and Christ-like, we need not to be ashamed by people's circumstances. It says in 16, it says, and he was not ashamed of my chains. And the fact that Onesiphorus wasn't ashamed of Paul's situation, being thrown into prison, and that he was brave enough because of the not only the risk, but the stigma also. If Christians aren't a desirable community at that point, you know, hit the lack of shame of just being able to serve. And that's quite honestly not what happened with a lot of the other believers. So that's another good example that we can learn from Onesiphorus, is he had compassion, and we need to have that same compassion for people who might have other bondage. So yes, there is obviously prison ministry we can be connected to, but there's lots of other bondage that some of our fellow believers might be in that we might just have to be brave enough to try to deal with, whether it's dependency issues or otherwise. Third point, the next thing he tells us about Onesiphorus was that he sought him out diligently. In verse 17, it says, when he arrived in Rome, Onesiphorus sought him out diligently, and he found me. So Paul would have been moved around, so it would have taken effort. This was not just Google Maps, where's Paul? This would have taken a lot of issues to get through, and he had to be very brave to figure it out, because they would have moved Paul around because of how high profile he was, and yet it was a one-man search party, and he eventually did find Paul and was brave enough to go find him. I think one of the lessons we can take from this is that we have to be proactive in our hospitality. We can't necessarily, it's not lazy to wait for people to come to us, but we have to be energetic and actually looking for opportunities to be serving and refreshing one another. We need to seek them out. And I think that there could be a whole, actually proper sermon, about how Jesus actually is offering that to us as he ends up searching us out, standing at the door and knocking. And Jesus is the ultimate one who refreshes. But we can see that we need to be encouraged to be able to seek out those opportunities to refresh. For Samaritan's Purse, this is one of the things that we, when we're over lunch, Sarah and I, you can ask us questions. We're always looking for these opportunities, and it takes a lot of effort. It's when Libya happened a week ago, just over a week ago, when Morocco the week prior. It's always our office is never stable, Sarah, because as soon as something happens, we have to move forward to figure out how we're getting in, how we're actually dealing with the situation. It's a full court press, which makes no sense in the English context, but does that make sense? I don't know what the equivalent is. So in basketball, full court press, you quickly sort of rush to the net. It becomes a full effort. We end up all pushing forward. So as soon as Libya hit, the team was busy trying to figure out what were the access points into Libya, whether it was through the embassies in Washington or London, whether it was through partners on the ground. We ended up actually going via Cairo, figuring that there was actually better access via Cairo. But we now actually have a partner that's actually met with the existing president of Libya. And so it always becomes a question of how do we end up proactively getting to the places and people that are in need. So lastly, Onesiphorus went the extra mile. In fact, he went hundreds of extra miles, because it says in the text that he also helped Paul when he was in Ephesus. Those are not neighboring. That's not a suburb of Rome by any means. And so we can see that Onesiphorus, he went the extra mile to be able to offer hospitality to Paul, both emotionally and physically. The sort of a word for you to be able to think on and look up, and you can Google later, is the Greek root for hospitality. And it's philoxenia, obviously not a Greek scholar. I think we all recognize the two pieces of the word. So philo being love of from a friendship perspective, and xenia, we probably know it more from being xenophobic or being called xenophobic or something like that, but that's strangers. So this is love for a stranger, and that's the root for hospitality. So I almost like to challenge myself and think, well, it's nice to be able to be a good host, but if you're only hosting friends and family, well, that's not really hospitality. That's just having a good time. But hospitality that we're called to, biblical hospitality, is really about looking for those opportunities to actually be turning a stranger to a friend and actually loving a stranger. And so for an organization like ours, which is called Samaritan's Purse based on the Good Samaritan story, it's all about this, you know, the Jewish man at the side of the road that was neglected and ignored by others that were going by other Jewish religious leaders and scholars. And then it was a Samaritan who is the least liked, poorest, farthest thing from being a friend that actually stopped and helped. And not only did he end up helping, he ended up bandaging, he ended up taking care of him, he ended up taking him a distance to an inn, and then he paid for it all. And that's what we end up striving to do within our ministries, is to go that extra distance to be able to love and care for those strangers around us. So that's biblical hospitality for today. We don't really know who we get the opportunity to serve, and there's always going to be a testimony that comes out of these things. And when we end up taking the brave steps to be able to move out of our comfort zone and being able to do things either through the church or through your home or on mission trips or working for organizations like ours, great things come out of it. The Lord does not forget the great things that end up happening through our ministries. In Hebrews 13:2, it actually suggests, you know, you never know. You may very well be hosting an angel. Wouldn't that be amazing? So just to close, I'm trying to keep this nice and tight for everyone. I think we just need to look back on the four things that we can be maybe working on in terms of having more biblical hospitality in our lives is being faithful to our brothers, refreshing them, not being embarrassed by their afflictions, and just going that extra mile and seeking them out. And so Onesiphorus doesn't get a lot of text in the New Testament, but there's enough there that I think that we can all be challenged. And Priscilla and Aquila, there wasn't enough time for them today. Three great names. My kids are lucky that they're already named. We could have named them Priscilla, Aquila, and Onesiphorus, the poor things. But anyways, I'll leave you with those for you to be able to do some additional thinking and looking on. So I'd like to invite the band back, or whatever's next. Thank you for your time today.